Today is April 2nd, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 121. That's right, the palindrome episode. This is a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, the palindrome editor-in-chief. No, wait. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you would like to comment, if you would like to add your comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com.
I just love your gun sound effect. It makes me feel six again.
Oh, that's excellent. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing wonderfully well, and I'm actually, even though we still have another week or so, I'm starting to get kind of excited about NAB, because that's coming up here shortly.
Yes, it is, NAB.
That's right, and we're going to have coverage from the event.
Yes, we are, and that's going to be very exciting. I have a question for you, though, that's somewhat unrelated.
Okay.
What the blank is wrong with Bono?
Now, do I get to fill in something
sure.
in the blank myself?
But you can fill in whatever you want, yes.
Okay.
And in this case, I'm actually referring to his inability to count in Spanish.
Well, you know, I can't fault him for that. Okay, actually, I can. Why not?
Yeah, you know,
rat you, Bono.
He's been everywhere. I bet the lad can speak passable Spanish, but 1, 2, 3, 14, what's up with that?
Maybe it's new math.
Yeah, I guess so. We actually use that count, the uno, dos, tres, catorce, that Bono uses in one of their recent U2 songs, to count in the recording for this week's show. And I just kind of, you know, like was thinking to myself, what the heck, dude?
Maybe it's a pun.
Maybe. What? All right. Well, we're not off to a great start with the banter, so maybe we should jump right to the news this week, huh?
Yeah, maybe we should. The Apple lawsuit Zephyr VIP passenger car is beginning to get a little crowded thanks to a new suit over the iMac's display capabilities, and two Apple executives cashed in on some stock while two retail employees tried to cash in on stolen iPhones. Adobe took Photoshop online. A MacBook Air suffered from some serious pwnage. A security company offered a Mac Trojan horse warning. Apple topped yet another list. And Sprint's Instinct is gunning for the iPhone. And this week's quick tip, faster tabbed browsing in Safari 3.1.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Cabot Tech, Brown and Keller LLP filed a federal class action lawsuit on Monday that claims Apple deceptively marketed its new 20-inch iMac in a way that grossly inflated the capabilities of its monitor, and which is, quote, vastly inferior, unquote, to the previous generation it replaced. The suit filed in the U.S. District Court, Northern District of California, claims that Apple is deceiving customers by, quote, concealing that the new 20-inch iMac monitors are inferior to the previous generations and those of the new 24-inch iMac. In addition, the monitors are incapable of displaying millions of colors despite Apple's marketing claims, unquote. The suit alleged that Apple told customers both the 20-inch and 24-inch iMacs displayed, quote, millions of colors at all resolutions, unquote, and that the new 24-inch iMacs display 16,777,216 colors, as did the previous generation of the 20-inch iMac. But here's the rub, according to the case. That case claims that the new 20-inch iMac monitors display 98% fewer colors at only 262,144 colors. Brian Kabatek, managing partner of Kabatek Brown Keller, melodramatically added, quote, Apple is squeezing more profits for itself by using cheap screens, and its customers are unwittingly paying the price, unquote.
Sorry. Okay. Apple Chief Operating Officer Tim Cook sold 300,000 shares of Apple stock last week at $135.86, that is U.S. dollars, and that's per share. That came to a total of about $41 million. Chief Financial Officer Peter Oppenheimer joined in on the fund, too, with a stock sale that was worth about $19 million. The documents were filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission back on March 26th. Mr. Cook's shares were converted from restricted stock, which were vested and due to expire, and Mr. Oppenheimer's stock sale was part of a prearranged stock trading plan. The transactions come only a couple of weeks ahead of Apple's second quarter earnings report on April 23rd, where many analysts will be watching closely to see if the company announces strong Mac and iPhone sales, along with a jump in iPod sales. TMO will be covering the earnings conference call, so be sure to watch for our earnings report coverage.
If you haven't been able to buy an iPhone at Salem's Rockingham Palace store, that's the Rockingham Park Apple store for those of you actually concerned with, like, you know, being accurate, it might be because two employees managed to steal 332 of them before getting snagged by the long arm of the law. Joshua Grand and Christopher Nashid were ultimately charged with stealing and attempting to resell more than $132,000 worth of iPhones. Store managers first contacted police in January 2008 after discovering that some iPhone inventory was missing. Salem police then spent the next 3 months investigating the case and ultimately arrested both suspects on March 25th. Mr. Grand is being held in Essex County Jail in Middlesex, Massachusetts, on a fugitive from justice charge, and Mr. Nashid is being held in the Rockingham County Jail on $250,000 in bail. No word yet from Mensa on Messrs. Garand and Nashid's membership applications.
And Adobe unveiled a beta version of Photoshop Express, a web-based version of its professional image editing application, Photoshop, that happened on March 27th. And I just have to stop for a second and say, how in the world did I manage to write the script this week so you get all the fun stories?
That is a good question, but thanks.
Sure. All right. The web app, and I don't know if you can hear the sirens. They're going by in the background now. Maybe they're on their way out to pick our good friends up that stole all the iPhones. Ha. All right. And back to today's news. All right. Photoshop Express lets users store, sort, and show their digital images and links to social networking sites like Facebook. Photoshop Express offers users 2 gigabytes of online storage, and it supports non-destructive editing, converting images to black and white, and includes red eye removal, image cropping, and blemish removal. It also includes special effects like sketch, distort, and pop color, which highlights parts of an image by removing the color from the rest of the image, and a lot of other features too. Photoshop Express is free, and new users can sign up at the Adobe website.
Charlie Miller, also known for his iPhone hack, managed to walk away from Kansas West's Pwn to Own contest with $10,000 and a MacBook Air after successfully hacking into that MacBook Air. Mr. Miller was able to successfully hack the laptop only after the rules of the contest were relaxed to allow for more than remote attacks. On the first day of the event, contestants unsuccessfully attempted to remotely hack into the MacBook Air itself, a Windows PC, and a Linux PC. On the second day, however, Mr. Miller was able to gain control over the MacBook Air in only 2 minutes by directing a contest organizer to visit a specially crafted website with the laptop. The website contained code that Mr. Miller developed specifically to hack into the MacBook Air. Exactly what the code did to the machine is a secret and will remain that way until after the contest organizers can notify Apple on the exploit, thanks to the non-disclosure agreement Mr. Miller was required to sign. Based on the contest rules, however, it seems likely that Mr. Miller took advantage of an undisclosed flaw in the Safari web browser. Once Apple has been notified of the potential security flaw, the company will likely issue an update that patches the threat.
And computer security company Sophos Labs is warning Mac users that it has discovered a Trojan horse application for the Mac dubbed Immunizator. While Sophos Labs is calling the application a Trojan horse, Immunizator actually falls more into the scareware category because it tries to scare users into purchasing security software. When run, the application always reports that it has found privacy and security problems on the user's Mac and then prompts the user to purchase Immunizator in order to correct the problems. Just like any other Trojan horse application, Immunizator must be installed before it can be run, and in this case, users must also find the application on the internet and then download it. So far, it appears that the application does nothing more than prompt users for payment, which could also potentially lead to identity theft or at least a stolen credit card number. Immunizator does not appear to pose a direct threat to Mac OS X security, and it does not take advantage of any flaws or exploits in Mac OS X. Instead, it relies on scare tactics to trick users into giving up personal information. So, of course, we advise to avoid potentially hostile applications
with just a little bit of effort.
With just a little bit of effort. That's right. Okay, so here's what you want to do. Stay away from websites you don't trust, and don't install software from unknown or untrusted sources.
Always, always good advice, no matter how secure the Mac or your Windows machine is or your company's networking firewall, whatever.
And dude, thanks for covering for me when I hit the end of the line and the next one wasn't there.
You got it. Apple has been topping best of lists for some time, and now it's coming out on top of yet another with its first place ranking in a brandchannel.com survey. And this is yet another fun story for me, so thanks. Apple ranked higher than other companies in almost every positive category in the survey, which was comprised of marketing professionals. Apple ranked highest on questions like, what brand can you not live without? And what brand is most likely to revolutionize the branding industry in the next 5 years? And my favorite, what brand, if sent back 100 years, would have the biggest impact on the course of history? Like, totally. Apple also came out on top with questions like, what brand would you most like to sit next to at a dinner party? Oh, that's so cool. And what brand inspires you the most? And if you were to describe yourself as being a brand, what brand would you be? The company didn't, however, take top honors in every topic. Those questions kill me. The question, what brand do you think is truly going green, no company actually took first place in. Toyota came a distant second to no company and was followed by BP, it used to be known as British Petroleum, the body shop, and Honda, which is funny that BP could actually be up that high considering that nasty pipeline incident they had a few years ago.
How about that?
Microsoft took the top honors in the category. I love this one. Microsoft took the top honors in the category. If you could rebrand any brand, what brand would it be? And Microsoft was followed by the United States.
Ouch.
Ford, Coca-Cola, and Pepsi, and that's probably a very good demonstration that the survey was not entirely without merit.
Okay, and finally in the news, Sprint announced on April Fool's Day, although it was not necessarily intended as a joke, a new smartphone called Instinct, which sounds to me more like a men's cologne. The device was made by Samsung to compete with Apple's iPhone. Instinct follows in iPhone's footsteps in terms of form factor with an all-touchscreen interface, as well as some of the features of the iPhone. Sprint's tagline for the device, which will be released in June, is, quote-unquote, "Slow ends this June." And that sure sounds like a shot at the iPhone's reliance on the Edge network for data. Sprint said, quote, "This revolutionary device speeds up the user experience like no other touchscreen phone," unquote. The company plans on doing this by using its EVDO Rev-A data network, which it claims offers peak download data rates of 3.1 megabits per second and peak upload rates at 1.8 megabits per second. Instinct also added some features lacking in the iPhone, most notably voice activation for phone calls and other functions on the device such as accessing text, picture messages, information from traffic, movie and sports news, and search. To date, Apple has not offered voice activation on the iPhone. Now, on the other hand, search functions for Instinct will be provided by Microsoft's Live Search technology.
Ouch.
Whereas the iPhone can access any search engine through Safari, including some of the built-in Google apps.
Now, other features supported on the device include a built-in GPS provided by Telenav, Sprint TV for live and on-demand TV content on your phone where you want it most, and the Sprint exclusive entertainment network for sports and entertainment video, and Pocket Express, which is yet more sports and entertainment information. Users will be able to buy music from the Sprint Music Store. Hooray! Pricing for the device has not been announced, but some reports have suggested it will be in the $300 range or less. Price unconfirmed by either Sprint or Samsung, but that would make it substantially lower than the iPhone. Sprint did announce that data plans will start at $69.99 without specifying what those plans would entail. ChannelWeb reported that the entry-level plan will include 450 minutes and unlimited data, with an unlimited voice and data plan being priced at $99.99 per month. Samsung will be spending $100 million on marketing this thing. That's more than the company has spent on any other product in the past. Instinct. For men. All right, the sound of Ricky playing the bass, not the sound of our laughter, means it's time for the context machine, which where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
We do. And, you know, I'm thinking that men's cologne is a really great place to start.
Instinct for men.
For men.
You know, it's so first of all, let's come to praise Caesar here.
Oh, excellent.
With the Instinct. They've pretty much duplicated the iPhone's form factor.
Right.
But probably not enough so that Apple would be able to stop them from doing it. Okay, so from a competitive standpoint, that's smart.
Right.
I know that a lot of Apple apologists out there, a lot of Apple fanboys were out there screaming about how, you know, it's just a copy. Yeah, it is a copy, but in this case, it's a smart copy because I don't think Apple can stop them. And quite frankly, the iPhone looks great.
It does. And, you know, if you put the Instinct and the iPhone side by side, the Instinct looks nice, but the iPhone does look better.
Oh, it looks way nicer. And the interface on this thing, from the pictures that Sprint itself posted, the interface is just ugly. So they got the form factor right. Yeah. But they've made an ugly-ass interface. That's just all there is to it.
You know, I think this is a perfect example of what's happened over and over, where Apple creates a revolutionary new product, and then everyone else thinks if they make something that looks like it, they will have the same success. And there's a lot more that goes into that than just making something look like the iPhone.
Yeah, but in this case, Jeff, I mean, this is yet another demonstration of the fact that despite Apple offering the exact blueprint of what to do with iTunes, with iPod, and now with iPhone, their copying stopped at the form factor, and that interface is just ugly. It's just it's depressing. It's bleak.
It is, and it doesn't even include multi-touch.
It doesn't include multi-touch, but that's okay because I don't really think that I don't think it's going to be a problem because I think that even a lot of iPhone users don't use multi-touch touches.
Well, then
no one's going to buy.
I'm in the minority.
Actually, in this case, you probably are. But I don't think anyone's not going to buy this thing because it doesn't have multi-touch technology.
Right. I just wanted to point that out to make sure people got that. Even though it has a touch interface, it's not the same as the touch interface Apple is using.
Right. Right. And then let's look at other positives while we're still somewhat on the positive thing.
Right.
The EVDO Rev-Aid network is faster than Edge.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I've used the EVDO card on a laptop, and it was actually quite zippy. So that's
totally
good for them.
Usable.
That's good for them. And also having voice activation. I mean, it's ridiculous that the iPhone still doesn't have voice activation.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that's going to be a surprise that rolls out with iPhone software 2.0.
Or actually in the iPhone physical rev that we're kind of expecting in the next few weeks.
Either way, as long as it shows up, I hope it shows up soon.
Yes, I hope that it definitely shows up soon. Oh, look at that! Hey, popped up on my software update or a bunch of updates.
Yeah, you're probably seeing like iTunes, QuickTime, and Front Row.
Yes, did we get those this morning?
Oh, yeah.
All right. You rock.
We are so on top of it.
Excellent. So be that as it may. So anyway, so we've got the positive. We've got the voice activation. That's good. That's really good. And it is definitely puts this thing ahead of Apple's iPhone in terms of that functionality. And when you have a device that has a virtual interface, you need voice activation.
Yeah, you do.
Call Jeff.
Oh, I need wait, to be able your to iPhone didn't call me.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't call you. And it needs to be able to do that. Now, let's see. Wait, there was one of the built-in GPS is very smart.
Right. You know, I'm not all that worried about having GPS in my phone, especially now that we have the triangulation software technology thing in the iPhone.
That's a pseudo GPS.
Right. But, you know, having the built-in GPS, that's a really big thing for a lot of people, and that's going to be a good selling point for the product.
I use the pseudo GPS via Google Maps. I use that all the time, though.
I do too. And I'm not, you know, it's close enough for what I need to do. It's if I need to have something that's more accurate than that, I probably want to have a real GPS. But I totally get that there's a lot of people that want to have all of that in the one little thing. And, you know, and so great. I'm really glad that they put the GPS in there because that is a good selling point.
Well, yeah. And two, you know, like the difference, having a phone with a GPS is different than having a GPS in your car.
Right. And
because
okay,
you can
so what it comes
use it when you're walking around, but let me actually add to that before so I'm going to continue to interrupt you.
Okay.
I would let my wife have my Garmin device and get a mount for my iPhone if it had a true GPS in it.
Okay, that would be cool.
Wouldn't that be cool? Because you know, had the headphones coming off of it or used a Bluetooth thing and it's mounted, it's right there. You can see who's calling when you come in, you know, and get your GPS stuff all at once. That's cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
So I think that it's good that the Instinct has a GPS device, and I'm glad that they're pressuring Apple on that.
You know, I think Apple eventually will add GPS. It's just a matter of when they decide it's the right time.
Yeah, I'm sure that they will.
And it'll be the right time when Uncle Steve gets lost and needs to have a real GPS to figure out where he's at.
I'm sure that you're right. So now let's look at the other stuff. We've got Sprint TV for live and on-demand TV content, whatever. Some people like that. I don't care. Whatever. And it's going to be Sprint-powered, and that means it's going to suck with it as an interface.
Yeah.
All right. And then the sports and news information, whatever. You can get all that stuff. To me, I can get that on my iPhone because I've got a web browser.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing with telling me that they have this whole application for getting sports and news. Two applications. Ooh, boy, howdy. Yeah, whatever. I mean, that's what you have internet access and a fracking web browser for. You know, yeah. I don't need separate applications for that. But I get why they would do that, because if they give you an application to cull news and sports information, it's an application that's getting it through their specific channel, and I'm sure that it's a revenue generator in some way.
Yeah, and Microsoft's Live Search technology, give me a frickin' break. That's just a poor choice. That's a poor choice. It's a poor choice by people who don't get that end users actually want stuff that works.
Well, you know, if you look at something like rolling Microsoft's Live Search into a product, to me that's not so much about providing a search solution for the end user. That's more about a marketing strategy between companies. Because, I mean, clearly with the way Microsoft's Live Search works, that's not the way you're going to go if you're going to provide your end users with a truly robust search system.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I think that it also says a lot about, you know, they never once talk about how great the whatever browser that they're going to include with this is. Not once.
Right, and gee, why do you think that is?
Yeah, well, we can guess. And the fact that they're needing to work with Microsoft's Live Search, and I would not be surprised. I don't know this for a fact, folks. This is me pontificating from my armchair pontificator chair. Right.
Oh, I thought you had a throne.
Sometimes I have a throne. This is not my throne. This is just my armchair pontificator chair.
Well, please, but pontificate away.
I imagine that Microsoft is the one actually paying for this, or at the very least paying for it paying like actually paying all the bills relating to this. Because, you know, they have to buy market share for live search because no one wants to use it.
Yeah, no one wants to use it. That's right.
And yeah. You know, and it's pretty, you know, I think it's telling that they're not claiming a great browser. And so,
yeah, I think that says a lot.
I think it says a lot too. And now there's another thing too that I think is pretty interesting on this. Sprint was talking. Was it Sprint or Verizon that was saying? Excuse me, boy. I hope you didn't hear that. Was it Sprint or Verizon that was saying? you know how they were quite happy about having passed on the iPhone.
I believe that was Sprint.
I thought it was Sprint too. Well, if they're so happy that they passed on the iPhone, why are they spending $100 million on marketing an iPhone lookalike?
Because they're really happy to be able to spend that money. They're just a happy company, Brian.
I guess so. But I think that is really, really telling. I think that this product demonstrates that the iPhone, one way or another, does have AT&T competitors a little bit tense.
You know, I think that the iPhone really surprised the other cell phone manufacturers and carriers. I don't think they expected it just to take off like it did.
Mm-hmm. And it has taken off. And it's also telling that Sprint is in an exclusive deal with Samsung on this after AT&T and Apple had gotten so much flack for having an exclusive deal.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, Sprint wasn't necessarily giving them that flack, but Sprint was talking about, you know, how stoked they were to have passed on it. You know, kind of like right. the I can't come up with an analogy. I had something briefly in mind involving high school halls and rejected jocks and things like that, but I can't figure it out.
But you could go like totally old school and say, you know, like IBM passing on the Apple One. That's like way old school.
The Apple One?
Or Apple II, excuse me. Yeah, wasn't it IBM that back when Jobs and Woz put together their computer idea, they went back to their bosses?
No, it was HP.
HP. Well, it was letters. It was a long time ago. You know, who knows?
Yeah, it was HP, and they definitely were. They passed on it, and thus was born Apple.
Okay, see, it would have been a lot more clever had I remembered it was HP instead of IBM.
Of course, the issue there was that Woz had to offer it because of his contract. He was an engineer with HP at the time.
Dude, you're totally ruining my cleverness.
Sorry. All right, so anyway, the whole instinct thing is, you know, it's very interesting. It's very telling. There's a lot more than meets the initial eye here. I think that a lot of Apple fanboys that are you know, totally dissing the instinct don't understand the issues. I think that Sprint will probably sell a few of these things. But I think that if the interface sucks as much as I think it's going to suck, it's not going to even touch the iPhone in the long run.
No, I think one thing that it has going for it on the interface that a lot of people are just going to love, at least people that are into the total techno, anything but Apple world. As I recall, the Instinct has haptic interface also. And so, you know, just being able to touch the screen and feel the little buzzy thing. Oh, my God, there's going to be a total new market for that. And it's going to be adult oriented. I'm sure of it.
maybe. So we'll have to see where this goes. But I don't think that people should be as quick to dismiss this thing as many people have, and I don't think that people should be as quick to criticize Sprint on the form factor, and I think that Sprint's going to have a rude awakening when it comes to the fact that the interface is going to suck, and I think they're going to be very unhappy with the way people react to that.
You know, if you're going to get upset over the form factor, you're going to have to really get upset with pretty much every cell phone manufacturer out there because they have all used the same form factors, and when a new style comes out, then everyone starts using it, you know. And we used to have the big brick phones, and then it was the smaller, you know, mid-sized candy bar phones, and we started getting a flip phone thing, and okay, and so now we're getting the flat interface style. It's mm-hmm. it's part of the whole evolution.
It is part of the whole evolution. Now, it will tickle me pink if the second version of the form factor for the iPhone, which we are expecting in a few weeks, ends up being it ends up kind of resetting that bar even before the Instinct is released. That'll crack me up. But we'll have to see if that happens though.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole interface that the iPhone has right now, I mean, it's pretty slick.
I was talking about the form factor.
What did I say?
You said interface.
I said interface, didn't I? I'm so hooked on saying interface today. I don't know what my problem is. I think the form factor is really good already, and I think it would have to be just there's, of course, they've got something hidden away that's going to completely blow my socks off, and I can't wait to see what it is because that's what Apple does. But I mean, even still, the form factor, see, I said it right that time,
yay,
that Apple has given us right now is already stellar. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess we should expect to see changes along the way that improve it even more, and we can throw out the iPod as a perfect example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Of course. You know, the iPod Touch is already thinner than the current iPhone. I think that we'll – anyway.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool little device.
It is a cool little device, but we should move on.
We should. And since we're on the whole iPhone thing already,
mm-hmm.
what do you think of these guys stealing iPhones?
Well, I think that it's funny, kind of. I'm not a big fan of theft, and so it's not funny from that standpoint. It's just funny that they thought they could get away with it that long. It's also funny that they didn't realize that they were being, you know, investigated and watched for 3 months.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, and you know, what did they think, that just no one was ever going to notice? Or yeah, I mean, you know, we weren't there. We don't know what the deal was, but yeah, not necessarily the sharpest knives in the tool shed, or whatever the phrase is.
Or they're not the brightest crayons in the box.
Nor the brightest crayons in the box.
Yeah, you know, when I saw this whole thing come up, I thought, are you kidding me? Can you be, really, really be that lame? Then I stopped and thought for a minute, and I went, yeah, I guess you really can.
Yeah, you know, there's the world, unfortunately, takes all sorts of folks. And
it does.
I mean, 332 of the things. I mean, you just, you know, there's a point at which your greed just got to say, hey, I think we've stolen enough.
You know, if you steal one or two along the way, and keep in mind, all of you budding criminals out there, we are not condoning theft. But if you steal one or two, and you do it right, the likelihood of getting caught is pretty slim.
Yeah.
But when you steal 332, you're going to jail.
Yes, because someone is going to there's enough money there that's worth it to pay someone to figure out where the hell this is going. Who's stealing our stuff?
Right.
Hey, Bob, someone's stealing our stuff. Can you figure it out?
Yeah. You know, they're going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. I shook my head and I thought, oh, kids these days.
Yeah, kids these days. Well, be that as it may, do you have any thoughts on the Pwn2Own contest?
You know, when I saw the results of the Pwn2Own contest, I thought, oh, man, this is going to start so many flame wars. And of course, it did, because mm-hmm. you'll have the Apple fanboy apologists going, oh, well, they had to change the rules, and that's the only way they could do it. And then you have the Windows fanboys going, dude, your MacBook, it so went down. See, it's not better than Windows. Yeah, of course that's going to happen. And I just find it very interesting that no one was able to hack into any of the computers until they got to the next phase where they changed the rules where you could have physical access to the machine.
No. They didn't get physical access to the machine. They were able to direct.
Okay.
What they did is they very artificially set up an environment where the contest organizers became the idiots who click on something in an email.
Right. Okay. And that's what I meant by physical access. They actually had someone at the machine that was going to be hacked.
Yeah.
Yes, it
okay.
was not them. It was someone else, and they had to tell them what to do.
Right.
Right. And that's what it took before anyone was able to hack into any of the computers, not just the Mac,
yeah.
but also the Windows Vista machine and the Linux machine.
Yeah, which is very interesting.
Yeah, what that tells me is that everyone is getting more serious about security in the operating systems. And I think that's a good thing all the way around. Now, the fact that we had a Mac that went down in 2 minutes – all right, my guess is that this guy spent a lot of time working on exactly what he was going to do, planning out his whole strategy way in advance.
Well, yeah, he had this ready ahead of time.
Yeah, I'm sure he had tested it, and he knew exactly what was going to be involved. And so all he had to do was wait for the day when they change the parameters so that he could direct the person to do what he needed them to do. And then take over the machine.
All right, I've got a slightly different version of that too, and that's that this guy. I mean, this is a hacking conference,
right?
So he knew about this exploit, and he knew how to take advantage of this exploit. And then after
right.
the rules were changed, he quickly uploaded whatever he needed to whatever web page that he wanted. So he may not have actually had prepared for the rules to be changed. He may have just been ready when the rules were changed.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I can see that. I'm going to stick with my end, though, and I bet he had it totally ready to go, assuming that the rules were still going to change like they had the last year, so that he could do
what he did. Well, yeah, you're probably right, then. You're probably right. And be that as it may, I mean, yes, the rules were changed, and you know, yes, the contest organizers put themselves in the role of the idiot who clicks on something in an email. And yes, if you click on things like that in an email, you're an idiot.
Yes.
yeah. But, you know, it did take those special circumstances, but it was still able to be done. And there are idiots out there, and they do click on things.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why the bad guys send out the stupid emails in the first place. So, it's still a serious issue.
It is. And in defense of the idiots, because, well, someone's got to defend them every now and then, it is possible to engineer something that looks so legit that you can trick the smart guys, too.
Absolutely. And idiots should probably be replaced at the very least by ignorant, and I apologize to all the idiots out there.
I'm sure they all appreciate your apology.
I'm sure they do, especially since it was so obviously heartfelt and meant. But anyway, be that as it may, it is a serious issue that the Mac got hacked, and which doesn't mean that we can't also include the caveat that yes, it took the change in rules to make it happen. But it took the change in rules to make it happen for any of the machines. The Windows machine went down next.
Right. And actually, I think that the contest ended before the Linux machine was hacked.
Yeah, there you have it.
You know,
you have it.
Yeah. And so what that tells me is that we can expect our software manufacturers to continue knuckling down and working on security, and we will continue to have better and better products because of it, hopefully.
Indeed. Hey, you know, before we move on to the quick tip, which is a great quick tip, and I can't wait for it, there's something that we had meant to talk about last week that we ended up accidentally skipping.
Right, right.
And that's the uproar over Apple's malicious malware Trojan horse installing Safari on Windows thing.
Oh, yeah, those virus mongers at Apple.
Do you want to give the brief summation of what we're talking about in the first place?
All right, here's the background for everyone playing at home. The software update application that Apple has made for Windows, which updates Apple's applications for Windows machines, added in Safari. So before it had iTunes and QuickTime, now it also has Safari. So that showed up in the list of things that people could install from the software update application. All right, so that's what happens on the Mac, too. We're used to that. Windows users, however, kind of flipped and thought that Apple was trying to force software on them without their permission, and people started talking about this like a malware thing, and it just kind of escalated into this big old mess.
And it actually, it wasn't so much that Windows users flipped, it was the Mozilla and open source community, a subset of the Mozilla and open source community that flipped, as well as some Apple haters in the Windows world.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Because really, you know, normal people didn't care. They just didn't care. And there's one other mitigating factor. The Apple software update, the software update feature that we have in Mac OS X is run under control panels, right?
Yeah, right.
It's called software update. And while the behavior was exactly the same on the Windows side, it is found through iTunes. So there is a reasonable expectation that the software downloaded via that update mechanism will be iTunes related. However, that update application on the Windows side has always been called the Apple Software Updater.
It has. And you know, and from my perspective, you should expect that you're probably going to see other applications, Apple-branded applications in there, because when you download the iTunes installer for Windows, it also includes QuickTime, all right? So when you download and install that, you know right off the shoot you're installing two things. If you download the QuickTime installer for Windows, it's the same installer. So you know you're installing QuickTime and iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's already been set up. You're going to be having multiple applications anyhow, and since it didn't install Safari without anyone's knowledge, I really have a hard time looking at this as a malware thing, taking advantage of users and all that. I think it's more an issue of certain people not liking the idea that Apple has a mechanism where they can present new software to Windows users.
That's the issue, and that's actually where John Lilly, who is Mozilla's chief executive officer, comes into the story, because he basically hammered Apple for this, and I'm going to quote here. "What Apple is doing now with their Apple software update on Windows is wrong," Mr. Lilly said. "It undermines the trust relationship great companies have with their customers, and that's bad, not just for Apple, but for the security of the whole web. Give me a break." That's my part. Give me a break. That's where I come in. And he says that it's the particular way that Apple has made use of that channel, adding Safari by default to an update mechanism normally used for updates to already installed programs, including urgent security updates. So basically what he's trying to say is that Apple is preying on people who are used to using this mechanism for urgently needed security updates. And that's just not the case. I mean, every single update for iTunes, once you've installed iTunes on your Windows machine, you're going to get all your updates this way.
Right. And you know, and what it comes down to is Apple needs to have a tool that installs their applications. And it just so happens that the first program they released for Windows was iTunes. So that's where it ended up.
And it says, he also said, the problem here is that it, meaning this, the Apple software updater, lists Safari for getting an update and has the install box checked by default, even if you haven't ever installed Safari on your PC. So what? That's just ridiculous. I mean, this is definitely like, I'm really tense that Apple is being smart enough to appropriately leverage the tools that it has at its disposal. I don't get this. Go ahead, buddy.
All right, I'm gonna talk. Then you can talk. All right. If Mozilla is that worried about what Apple's doing, why don't they add their own software update installer utility to Firefox, and then they can put a little checkbox in for Thunderbird?
That's true. They could. There's, of course, the Firefox update mechanism actually runs without the user gets a checkbox saying, do you want to go and install this? But that's after it's already downloaded.
Right.
And quite frankly, that's actually a little more insidious than what Apple's doing. And I think that this criticism is at its best, at its most honest, it's based on their misinterpretation of the facts that the Apple software updater should somehow only be used for urgent security updates. That may be their perception, but that's never been the case. At its worst, it's hiding their true fear, and that's losing market share to Safari because Apple has a popular iTunes platform.
You know, and I can see them being concerned because, well, you know, Apple tends to make slick products. So, you know, that makes it okay to be worried. And if they're not worried about what their competition is doing, well, they're not going to be around because their competition will run over them. The way they're presenting their concerns, that's what I have a problem with.
Yes, and not only that, I have always posited that Mozilla and, you know, Firefox and Thunderbird, Kimino, whatever, all of these browsers and Safari are good for each other because the competition here is Internet Explorer, and the mindshare, the Internet Explorer is the standard or the only thing that people should worry about. The more people are willing to try Safari or Mozilla or both, I happen to use both, whatever, the more people that consider things like that, the more people will actually use either or both.
Right, and it also pushes all these companies to have to work on creating better and better products, which means ultimately the consumer wins. And I know that sounds sort of like the broken record thing because we say that all the time, but it's true.
It is true.
You know, competition is good for the consumer.
Yeah. Hear, hear.
Huzzah.
All right, now with that, and I enjoy talking about that, and I'm sorry that we missed it last week.
It's okay. It's our show, so we can talk about it this week.
That's true, and we just did. And now let's talk about your excellent quick tip, the quick tip of the week.
Right. All right, so our quick tip this week is about tabbed browsing in Safari. And tabbed browsing is great because you can save lots of desktop space if you like to have lots of web browser windows open at the same time, because tab browsing lets you take all of those windows and put them inside one single window. Now, Safari makes it easy to make new browser tabs through its Command T keyboard shortcut that tab users are already familiar with. But if you're using Safari 3.1, you can now double click in the tab bar to create new tabs, which is really nice if you're doing something and you don't want to have to take your hand off the mouse to get back to your keyboard to go Command-T. All right, now, if you're not familiar with tabbed browsing and how to make this whole thing work, here's what you do. You have to turn the tab bar on. So in Safari, you go to the View menu and choose Show Tab Bar. And then once you've done that, you can double-click anywhere in that bar, and it will add a new tab, automatically select it as your active browser window. And there you go, a great way to save desktop real estate and to be able to quickly create new browser windows without even having to take your hand from your mouse and put it back to your keyboard.
A couple of caveats. You do have to have tab browsing turned on already.
Right, which is that's the View Show Tab Bar part.
Right. But you won't see that option if tab browsing isn't activated, will you?
Oh, you're right. Right. So you'd have to go into Safari's preferences and check the option for tabbed browsing.
Yeah. And if you ever do use tabs, I highly recommend having that turned on anyway, because it keeps your windows from like bouncing around when you go from no tabs to having tabs.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. Because it adds more control stuff to the top of the window, so your browser windows are going to move around a little bit if it's showing up and then going away.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point.
And I've got some 13 tabs open right now. Now that's actually in several windows, and I realized that my browsing, because of the way I research stories and am constantly looking up things, my browsing might not be like everybody's, but I often have 20, 30 tabs open in a variety of windows. And I would much rather have 20 or 30 tabs open in a variety of windows rather than have 20 or 30 windows open.
I have to agree. And I tend to have probably about that many windows open or tabs open when I'm doing my research as well. And as cool as Exposé is for taking all those windows and organizing them for me so I can find things, it's still a lot easier for me to work through a bunch of tabs.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think this is a great tip, by the way. I didn't know that you could double-click now. I didn't realize that, so thank you.
You're welcome. And you know what? I just love when I write a tip that teaches you something new, because that's just fun to do.
Yeah, that's why I hired you.
Oh, great. So that means I get paid again this month. Sweet.
Yay! Hooray!
Hooray!
All right, take us out, buddy.
Okay. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, please send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. That's you and me and John. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Thanks, folks.